On this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show, we go through everything that we saw at PAX, including exciting games like Final Fantasy XV Pocket Edition, Reigns for Majesty, and a ton of other stuff. Stick with us.
I know a magical place we could go, so close your eyes and make a wish. For the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Touch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Touch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show. This is episode number 322. We're recording on September 8th, 2017. Thanks a ton for downloading this week's episode. If this is the first time you've heard us, I'm Eli and with me is Jared. And between the two of us, we have nearly 20 years of experience covering mobile games. And TouchArcade.com is the place to go for iOS news, and more accurately though, just mobile gaming news in general, because even though we focus on iOS, a lot of what we post is kind of also applicable to Android. Mm-hmm. So this, we also stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/TouchArcade. We also have a really cool Discord at discord.gg/TouchArcade. But this podcast, as well as the website itself, is supported by Patreon primarily, and you can find our Patreon at patreon.com/TouchArcade. Usually read backers at the start of the show. We were off last week because of PAX, and the week before that, remember, Patreon was down. So this is going to be a longer list. We usually don't get this much support in 1 week. It would be awesome if we did. But, so just real quick, thanks a ton to Kelvin R., Robert W., Jeff F., Craig G., everyone at Click Team, Daniel B., Lars T., Christian, Brett M., Matthew P., Lance L., Anya C., Thomas Lav, James R., Cameron S., Ken K., and David D. Thank you very much. You guys make what we do possible. So if you're not into the Patreon thing, but you still want to support the site and the podcast, the best way to do that is by doing your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. We get a small cut of anything that you buy through that link, which, you know, adds up over time, kind of like a change jar, which is pretty nice. If you're not into either of those two things, any word of mouth is really appreciated. If you have friends that also play mobile games and think they'd enjoy this podcast or our website, please give us a shout out. It's also worth mentioning that Patreon backers get a video version of this podcast, which is pretty cool. You can kind of see the news stories we're talking about, and we have our webcams hooked up, and you see the games we're playing in real time. So it's pretty neat. And of course, we always appreciate iTunes reviews. And if you want to email us for any reason, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. So yeah, try to compress the intro as much as I can.
You're getting good.
Yeah, do what I can. So this is our first week back after we posted a rewind episode from PAX. And actually the episode that I chose was from a past PAX, where I think I recorded in my hotel room or something like that. And this year's PAX was really awesome. Jared went for the first time. It was super busy. Posted a ton of just different mobile games and stuff like that. So I figured we'd kick things off with just kind of like going through the stuff that we saw.
Cool.
So this is just kind of off my own list of all the stories that we posted. So I guess first things first would be, and this is just in alphabetical order based on headline. I couldn't really think of a, I don't know. I was like obsessing over how to order this list when I posted it, because I was like, well, I could post like the best games on top. And then I was like, I don't know. It's like kind of an abstract thing to kind of figure out which was the best stuff that we saw at PAX.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I was going to do it by date. But then I was like, I don't know if that makes sense either. So when in doubt, alphabetical order wins out. So Puzzle Fighter was a really cool, demo that they had at PAX. It was just like one fight that you could do with people, and the iPads are all hooked up, so you were playing locally. So did you notice when you played, you were playing next to the dude, or you were playing with the dude that was standing next to you?
Yeah, he smoked me. I'm not super good at this game, but yeah. It's fun. It's nice compared to they've released Puzzle Fighter like games in the past. I think there was was there? A couple different branded ones. But anyway, True Puzzle Fighter. This one feels very like made for mobile, like very native to the platform. I think my only concern with it was the touchscreen controls, which work all right, but might take a little getting used to, because when you're under pressure, it's kind of tricky to figure out like what you want to do, how, you know, trying to rotate things. And to be fair, I have that issue with physical buttons too. So just one of those games that's very tricky when you get into high pressure situations. But everything about it seemed pretty good. It was kind of tough to see how the monetization model works. When you finished a game, you would get like a...
It was like a weird gacha or something, right?
Yeah, instead of like spinning a wheel or whatever, you'd actually spin E. Honda's sushi boat in his little sushi boat restaurant. I thought that was clever, but at the end of the day, it's just sort of a random prize thing at the end of the game. So I didn't notice any energy or anything like that, but I think it has an energy system. It's just something that kind of hard to tell when you're doing like a little short demo.
Yeah, well, also a lot. I mean, this obviously is a custom build for PAX, you know, so they're not going to include all that. All that junk, which seemed kind of weird that they even included like the E Honda thing at the end. Because they just could have easily left that out.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it'll be cool. It's supposed to soft launch soon-ish, before the end of the year. I actually think it might even release before the end of the year, or very early next year. And I'm sort of curious to play this. I feel like it's geared for an iPhone. Like this kiosk we were at was kind of like, you know, the iPads are all propped up so you can just play with one finger, not like holding the device or anything like that. But I feel like it's geared for one-handed, one-thumb sort of
play. Playing with your thumb, definitely.
So I'm curious to see how that works out, because I feel like that would be the coolest thing about a game like this is playing on your phone. But yeah, I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was fun, even though I got my butt kicked. And it'll have, you know, online multiplayer and stuff, which is a big deal for games like this. So it'll be interesting to see how it turns out.
Yeah, I'm stoked for this, because I think that the original Puzzle Fighter was probably my most played Game Boy Advance game.
Yeah, the Game Boy Advance was awesome.
Really loved it. And like, I remember when Puzzle Pirates first became a thing, I loved playing the sword fighting stuff, which was, you know, basically identical to this, you know, game concept. So I don't know, like a free-to-play online multiplayer sort of, you know, Puzzle Fighter, I'm all about. Like, provided the monetization isn't super gross, which I guess we'll see. It makes me worried if there's stuff like, you know, being able to buy like power ups or whatever. Like, I feel like you got to keep multiplayer fair, but it would seem that Capcom would have to know that, right? Like, it's not like it's going to take them, you know, someone being like, hey, you know, you should make sure the game's fair to everyone, regardless of whether or not you spent money, right? Like, that's just
like when it comes to big companies like this, like anything's on the table. Anything that seems like common sense usually is reason for concern, but I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I can deal with some pretty fussy free-to-play systems too. So, but there comes a certain point where it's just like too awful to where it's just ruining enjoying the game.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping it's anything like that. But I mean, I can deal with like very slowly collecting characters and stupid stuff like that. But yeah,
I mean,
power-ups that throw off the balance would be bad. And
when you think about it, like they could do character unlocking because each character has a different block pattern that drops. So the demo is both with Ryu and Ken, and like they have their drop pattern is like red, yellow, blue, or red, green, yellow, blue, or something like that. And it's just a very, very simple block pattern to deal with. And like the crux of getting good at multiplayer in games like this is like remembering those block patterns.
Yeah.
And so what you should have been doing when you're playing was like, you know, stacking up right on the far left or red on the far left side and stuff like that, because like when he drops on you, like that's going to be easy clear.
Mm-hmm.
But like the more advanced characters have more, at least again in the Game Boy version and probably other versions and stuff, had more complicated patterns for the way that their blocks drop. So like instead of just being like, you know, individual lines, like maybe it'll be like a checkerboard or other things that are more difficult to deal with, which doesn't really unbalance the game by any stretch of the imagination. It's just, you know, feels a little better.
Yeah,
I guess. But you know, like all those things just kind of play into the strategy of the game. So like you just learn how that works and kind of deal with it, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, next game on the old list here is Final Fantasy 15 Pocket Edition, which yes. I was super pleasantly surprised by.
Me too.
So I was kind of, I don't know, like maybe it's just being a jaded mobile gamer or whatever else. Like I was expecting this to be like very, I don't know, low effort, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Or something else. And instead what we got was like a shockingly adept port that seems like a one-to-one of the console version. At least, I mean, maybe it's not one-for-one, but as far as I remember, it was close enough.
I think it's like the idea behind it is to be mostly one-to-one with all the major points, but then things like battling and stuff like that streamlined for mobile along with the graphics. So I feel like you're going to get the same overall sort of experience that you get with like console and PC versions, but just in something that works a lot better on mobile, both in terms of like the graphics and the control scheme with the touchscreen. So
yeah, so the graphics are like these, if you haven't seen this yet, it's like chibi graphics, you know, so mm-hmm. like the kind of anime style, like big head, big eyes sort of art. But what's neat is that you go through all the same like cutscenes and mm-hmm. you have all the same voice work and all that stuff. Like they were able to reuse you know, a lot of the assets from the actual game, which makes it feel like oddly authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And even like the missions that Jared go through, like I think when I, you know, we recorded the video, I was like, all right, well, this is where your car breaks down, and then the car mm-hmm. breaks down, and then like mm-hmm. this is where they have you go, you know, kill monsters to get money to you know, repair the car, and sure enough, like, mm-hmm. that's exactly how the whole game went, which I think is pretty cool. You know, especially if you are the kind of person that like doesn't have a console because, you know, you're just, you know, a mobile game dude for life or whatever, but you've heard good things about Final Fantasy 15.
Mm-hmm.
At least from this initial kind of look at it, it seems like you can get, you know, pretty close to the full experience, or I guess as much of the experience mm-hmm. as you really need if you're getting mm-hmm. like all the cutscenes and dialogue and stuff. So that seems cool, right? I mean,
yeah, I think it's a good way to go as opposed to just trying to dumb down the models of the full version to where they'd work on mobile and having them look ugly or whatever. Because, I mean, even through this playthrough, you can tell like a lot of the textures and stuff are lower resolution. And then the character models themselves are far less polygons than something like on the console version. But because they changed the art style, it actually kind of works. It doesn't look just like a really ugly N64 model or something like that. You know what I mean? So I could see why they changed the art style, but it was really more to have it be something that could be more, you know, work better on the mobile hardware.
Yeah, it kind of like, so if you want a good idea, what it looks like, just imagine like those 3DS Final Fantasy games that they...
Mm-hmm.
They ported over to, or I guess DS, right? That was, I don't remember what.
Yeah, DS. It was way back.
Like a nicer version of that, like a more high polygon version of that kind of art, but still kind of, you know, low res and mobile-y, which I think is going to be totally fine when you're playing it on phone. I mean, like we recorded video off an iPad Pro, which is like the, you know, biggest screen. So you're going to notice any kind of texture artifacting and anything like that, as opposed to, you know, if you're playing it on the smaller screen of your phone, like all that stuff is just going to be blurred away by the screen size, you know? So really cool.
Yeah, if you look at like the camera angles and stuff like that are all like, you know, have a nice dramatic effect to them and things like that. The cutscenes are good.
Yeah.
I as somebody who's doesn't play a ton of Final Fantasy games, but enjoys one here and there, I had no interest in getting 15 when it came out and still don't, just because I don't play games like that on console really anymore, but the fact that it's coming to the phone means I might actually play through the whole game and get to enjoy it, so that's cool.
Yeah, I'm stoked for this, and you know, I really liked Final Fantasy 15, but I would say that the battle stuff was super fiddly, mm-hmm. and I wish it would have been done better in the game. And it seems like mm-hmm. this, the kind of like you know, tap to move auto battle mm-hmm. sort of stuff is like what I was hoping for out of the console version, I think, instead of
the battling is really fun in this.
Yeah, because the console version has this, like, almost, I don't know, like Devil May Cry knockoff sort of action-y crap that I just didn't really enjoy too much. So I don't know, but yeah, that's, it's something to look forward to. You know, we don't really have too many details beyond what we saw. It's like it's coming soon, and yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Yeah, I'm curious to see what they price the individual episodes at. Like, I kind of think this is going to be a $50 or $60 game once you buy everything. So we ran into the guys that made Timberman, and they had just like a ton of games to show off. First of which was this game called Digger Man.
This was rad.
So it was really cool. It was, you know, and the video is like 90 seconds long, so you get the gist of everything very quickly. But it's basically like a Dig Dug kind of thing, except you're going diagonally, right? Does that seem like a fair way to describe it?
Yeah, instead of digging straight down and left and right, you're actually digging downwards left and downwards right. And that enables it to be just a two-touch game, which I thought was a really smart kind of design move.
Yeah.
And what happens is that you can use that to get in like a really good rhythm. And so you're kind of like blazing through this dirt, trying to pick up the things you want and avoid the things you don't. And you're kind of all, it starts to get so fast that your body sort of just takes over and your mind is behind processing what's happening. Yeah. It's one of those games where you get like in the zone. And it reminded me a lot of that Noodle Cake game that came out, Leaping Legend, I think it was called, with the ninja.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like flip back and forth. It was that sort of same, like, two-button combination, but the action moves so quick, and once you sort of get used to it, you're just, like, blazing through. And, yeah, just really fun, really cool idea for, you know, there's a lot of digging games like this on the App Store, but not really anything that I've seen quite like this.
Yeah.
And even the whatever, you know, 30 seconds I played it after he handed it to me, and I'd never even played it before. And within that 30 seconds, by the end, I was like zipping along pretty well. So it's easy to like pick up and you know, get a hang of.
Yeah. So that's really cool. All of their games were coming reasonably quickly.
I think so. Yeah. This dude was like demo, expert. And so he's rapid fire demoing stuff to us and then moving right on to the next one. So I think he was kind of like, didn't get to ask the normal questions of like, when is this coming? How much it's going to be, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But they all seem pretty far along.
Yeah. So there's three CCGs on the show floor of PAX. And those were Eternal, The Elder Scrolls Legends, of course, and Shadowverse, which is really big in Asia. Eternal, I don't know. Like we got a demo of it, and it was kind of like, all right, well, this is like every fantasy game, card game ever. You know, like I don't really know what's that super neat or cool about this.
I think with them, I think their philosophy is that they're taking the fact that the game is digital and running with it and trying to do things in a digital game that you couldn't do with like a physical card game.
Yeah.
So like you can level up cards and it'll stay like permanent, and then that card will be different for the rest of the time you play it or whatever.
Well, so we found out that these are the guys, and you know, maybe this is common knowledge and I just didn't really know because I didn't look into it that much, but these are the guys that actually made The Elder Scrolls Legends for Bethesda. So like once we found that out, it became way more like this almost seemed like their tech demo that they like showed Bethesda, like, hey, check it out. Like we can make like a really good fantasy card game. Wouldn't this be neat if it had all this cool stuff in it?
Yeah.
So that was kind of neat to kind of like, you know, go through the looking glass on that. So, I mean, they say that Eternals, like, you know, that their stuff's doing well, but it almost seems like one of those things where like, they don't really care if this game does well because, you know, they have all these other more lucrative like contracting things. So,
I don't personally know anyone that plays it.
Yeah, but maybe that doesn't matter because I know people that play Elder Scrolls Legends. So if they're getting cut off that, like, who cares if they play their original game?
And it's kind of interesting, too, because I feel like all these games are all super well made and all have sort of even though they're like largely similar, they at least bring something different to the table. So it kind of just is up to you which one you feel like you want to get into, you know?
Right. So, you know, Legends of, or Heroes of, I'm sorry, The Elder Scrolls Legends, they had a big thing for their Heroes of Skyrim expansion. They had, you know, people teaching how to play the game and stuff like that. And what was interesting is I feel like there was more people playing that than there would have been otherwise, because a lot of these bigger booths have a ton of games do this thing where they like give you like a postcard to get stamps on, or, you know, like a hole punch through or something like that for doing like the individual things.
Yeah.
And part of doing that in the Bethesda booth, which I didn't do that, so I don't really know what the details was, but I just assume it works like every other booth. But like, you know, you had to play a game like Heroes of Skyrim or whatever to get another spin on their prize wheel or something like that. So otherwise, I'm not sure many people would really care about this on the PAX show floor, but it was still cool to see like full demo stations.
Yeah.
And I think that was also true for, I know that was true for Shadowverse, because that was, so to get the Twitch pin, you had to, I think there was four things. It was like you had to meet a streamer, like a partnered featured streamer that they had on one corner of their booth. You had to get demoed the new Twitch stuff, which is basically the Twitch extension stuff that they launched last week. Play this game, or take a photo with like their Twitch logo and tweet it with the, like, some PAX Twitch hashtag or whatever. What we did real quick when we first walked through on Friday. It was like, yeah, sure, give us a demo on your stuff, because I was actually pretty interested in the Twitch extension stuff, so that was cool. And then just took a photo with the thing, and we just, you know, got our pins and stuff like that and pieced out without needing to stand in any lines or whatever. When we went by before, it was like, if there wasn't a Twitch pin on the line, there is no reality that exists where there would be 100 people in line to, like, you know, check out a Twitch tech demo or a free-to-play card game or something like that. So I thought that was
I'd be interested to know, like, what the conversion rate of that sort of thing is. Like, say they shuffle 103 people through there to play this game that's trying to get the pin, that was kind of like, well, I'm just doing this for the pin, but then they're like, dang, this is actually cool, and then they go home and they get into whatever that game is.
I don't know. I mean, they did that last year with Vainglory, and I couldn't tell you what effect it had at all.
I don't know. I didn't get a pin.
Well, you should have. Let's see here. So Extra Color is another game from, so this wasn't from the developer of Timberman. It was like,
he said it was his brother, I believe. So I don't know if that means Digital Melody's publishing it or not. It wasn't out yet. I thought maybe it was actually out yet, but it doesn't seem to be. But it was a really clever kind of concept. You have this diamond in the middle of the screen, and you can alternate between two different colors, by tapping. And then as these different, you know, lines and other objects kind of fly towards the screen, you got to match the color so that it can safely pass through it, which is a concept that's been used in games before. What I thought made this game extra cool was that you get bonus points for alternating your color in between waiting for the objects to, like, crash into your diamond. So it kind of becomes this risk-reward thing where you're, like, frantically tapping to alternate your colors and build up a huge stockpile of points, and then being able to stop and be on the right color in order to, you know, have the objects pass through you without being on the wrong color or whatever. So it was really super simple concept, very easy, like one button sort of, you know, time wasting kind of arcade game, but with like a pretty clever little concept that was a lot harder in practice than, you know, you would think it would be.
Yeah, it was cool. It was hard shooting a video of that, though, because, like, there's just extreme differences in color on the screen.
Yeah.
So Find the Balance is another one from these same dudes. This is pretty cool. It reminded me of, like, Topple and kind of those sort of things. In that, like, you know, you would get a puzzle and you had to figure out, like, so you get, like, three things, and you had to figure out how to stack them all in the game world and have them balance on top of each other without falling over. What I thought was pretty cool about it is that, like, the solutions that they even had you walk through, like, in the demo world, like, when they made you play, was like, wow, that's really kind of complicated, but really neat at the same time, how you need to balance all these objects. And because you can... So you'll have like three or four objects that are all very weirdly shaped, and you can rotate them and other stuff like that. So you got to kind of, like, just stop and look at, like, the areas that you have to start to lean things on. And then, you know, like, figure out, like, all right, maybe I put this thing in, but I'll rotate it like another, like, 45 degrees to make, you know, like, you know, the little notch out of it, be able to hold the next piece, or, whatever else, which I thought was pretty cool. You know, it was another very simple but just well done kind of puzzle element from
Yeah,
these
I
dudes,
kind of felt
which.
the same about this in that there's a million, you know, stacking games or whatever, but this one kind of had a neat twist to it that I hadn't seen before. With, you know, there would be some stationary points too that you'd have to work within to kind of stack your objects against and figure out the best way to do it. And one of the ones that I actually played seemed like it's almost like a puzzle. Like you got to figure out which objects to use first and stuff like that, because sometimes you have round objects and you have to stack them on like a pointy object. So you have to kind of figure out which one to use first, which one to build like your stable base from, and things like that. And he jumped ahead to one of the harder levels, and it was like, whoa, this is way beyond my skill level at this point.
Yeah, I like that the objects you were stacking weren't just like random geometric objects. They're like absurd stuff like sandwiches and bananas and donuts and
Yeah, I like that too.
you know other things that don't make a whole ton of sense. So I guess that's coming soon as well. So that's worth keeping your eye out for. So we saw Reigns two different times at PAX. So like they had their demo station set up, which I think was really awesome for people walking by to be able to see what's going on. 'Cause like so often at these shows, when you have like a kiosk that has an iPad or iPhone or whatever on it, like no one stops to look over your shoulder, right? To be like, oh, what do you plan on that tiny little screen over there? Instead, you know, so it, what the Reigns developer, I guess Devolver Digital did instead was get these like giant touchscreen TVs that they put, vertically, and then like got these you can't really see it in the video, but they have like borders on to make them look like giant iPhones. So you actually were playing Reigns you know as you would on the iPhone, but you know on this giant screen, so like anyone walking by or standing around can read the text and see what you're doing and all that stuff, which I definitely think that generated way more interest for a mobile game than they would have otherwise if there was just like a table with you know an iPad on it in the Devolver
It did.
Digital
It
booth, right?
definitely noticed like a lot of people walking by and being like, "What is that? Oh, that looks cool," or whatever, and then walking up and trying it themselves and stuff like that. And
Yeah.
what it was bad for was us trying to demo the game
Oh yeah.
because
So
you had to stand like 20 feet
yeah,
away.
so I'm standing like pretty far away to get the entirety of the screen in, which means I can't hear anything Jared's saying. Like the so Reigns is a game with a black screen with white text on it, and it's super hard for my camera to like focus on, especially that far away with the ambient lighting and all that stuff. So like the video originally is just not great. So then, you know, we posted it, Devolver Digital like retweeted it instantly. So I reached out to them. I was like, hey, you know, is there anyone here that has this just on their phone that we can do video of? Because our setup is more like, you know, we're used to recording up close, right? So this kind of threw everything for a loop. So definitely look at both videos if you're going to check them out on the site, because like the one is just cool to see how their booth is set up, but the other one, the developer himself actually like walks us through like some of the differences and other things like that. So it's basically just going to be more Reigns with cooler systems and everything else. So I got, you know, nothing but excitement for
He's a
this
super nice
stream
guy
coming up.
too, and fun fact, the phone he demoed it to us on, he actually like ripped out of their giant TV screen system or whatever. So that thing was actually running, you know, iPhones behind the scenes.
It seems strange that he wasn't just able to whip out his own iPhone. That still doesn't
Yeah.
make a whole lot of sense to me, but
I know.
whatever. Kingdom Two Crowns is headed to mobile. So if you haven't heard of this before, it's I guess Kingdom, which is a side-scrolling sort of like kingdom management game. Their biggest request from people was to be able to play co-op mode, which I really was kind of surprised by that because I
Well,
was
it never
like,
would have occurred to me. And then we played this demo, and I was like, this is so fantastic with multiplayer.
yeah, this is another game that has like just unbelievably contrasting bright and dark colors. So the video is not as good as I was hoping it was going to turn out to be because, like Reigns uses a lot of like lighting effects where certain areas of the screen go really bright. And other areas will be really dark. So it's like trying to get my camera to like just take the average of both instead of being like, whoa, this is super bright. And then like, whoa, it's super dark. Let me overexpose was kind of tricky. But it seemed really awesome. Like this definitely is a game that works really well with co-op play because like you and your buddy both just have a split screen.
Well, it's fun too because like so if you played Kingdom New Lands on mobile, you run back and forth and you kind of like need to gather certain materials and then you come back and you kind of build up a fortress. And the level is like massively huge, so you can run forever. And what's cool about the co-op is it's like, okay, I'm going to hang out at this base. I'm going to get, you know, some archers going to protect us. I'm going to start building a wall, whatever. And then like I ran off into the woods and was like trying to find coins and like recruit help. And I eventually got, I think I got my crown knocked off and it screwed me up for the rest of the game. But it was just neat to be able to kind of like delegate, like, okay, you're going to go do this and I'm going to go do this. But we're both like in the same game world. I like that.
It seemed really, I don't think they've fully figured out what's going to happen when like one player takes damage or whatever, but I thought it was a kind of an interesting thing to think about it from a game design perspective because like, so Kingdom is over, like you die when you lose your crown in Kingdom. Like, you know, you don't get like knocked off your horse. So it goes in the slow-mo mode and your crown falls off and like the goblins or whatever the bad guys are called steal your crown. Like that's it. But like, so you lost your crown in the game.
And then I lost the ability to, build up like we had the little statue or whatever that allows you to go from like building wood stuff to building stone stuff so you could build like a stronger fortress. And I had like the coins and everything, but because I didn't have my crown, I couldn't actually build up that stone thing, so I had to call my partner in to come do that. And so it's weird, it's like you're still in the game and you can still do certain things, but you don't have full power anymore. As opposed to just straight up dying. So
it kind of seemed like that was more of like an unintended thing than like an actual,
I don't know, like... if it is, they should keep it, because I thought that was a cool aspect. It's like, it's kind of like I don't know, I'm trying to think of a game where when you die you don't like leave the game, but you can do other things, you know what I mean, and kind of still screw around with your buddy that you're playing with, but you can't actually, you're not like part of the game anymore. It kind of felt like that.
God, I'm trying to, there's been so many games where you can do that, but I'm like, absolutely blanking on thinking of any of them. But I just thought it was an interesting idea in that, like, you know, your partner could effectively be dead. And David Martinez, who was demoing the game for us, like mentioned something along the lines of like, oh, we're thinking about like, you can maybe forge another crown, but it's just going to be expensive.
Yeah.
So like, cool, it seems like an interesting idea in that, like, you know, like you can have a dude effectively die, but then be like, all right, well, you know, I can make you a new crown. It's just going to take a couple days. Like, let me stabilize our fort right now. And like, I'll see if I can get some extra gold, which seems pretty neat that you can potentially have like a recovery from something like that. So I don't know. I thought Kingdom was really cool. And the idea of playing co-op is not something I, you know, never thought of, but you know, in retrospect seems really neat. So just real quick, Lotus is a board game that we saw at PAX that looked pretty cool. I'm not super into kind of board game stuff, but I still thought this was pretty neat. Like, it's based on a card game that you actually like play cards to build flowers. Mm-hmm. But that was a cool gameplay mechanic as far as like a card game was concerned. Like, I don't really play too many of these games, so I wasn't really I don't have a very educated opinion on, you know, if this is a good game or not, but I will say, like, as far as the port is concerned, like, it looked really beautiful, and I thought it was really cool how, like, your hand of actual cards then turned into, like, these flowers that looked alive, and so really good port. You know, I'm sure there's people out there that are, like, board game geek people that are like, oh, man, Lotus is coming to iPad, this is so cool, but, like, I just don't, I don't follow that world, so... Next thing we saw, well, I guess next thing in alphabetical order that we posted, so this is kind of absurd. We were just walking around trying to, like, you know, see if there was anything else that we missed at PAX, and ended up finding this, like, so PAX takes over all these different hotels in the area.
Yeah.
Like, any available conference room space, like, PAX takes over. It's kind of crazy how much they invade. Like, it reminds me of, like, an ant colony that just, like, takes over any, like, little space they can find, right? So we were wandering around and found this conference room in a nearby hotel that had like VR stuff set up. And I was like, all right, well, we don't care about VR. Like, let's just, you know, do it. But they also had like these weird like booths in the corner. So we're like, I don't know, let's just do a quick pass through these, see if there's anything there we care about. And, you know, assuming it was just going to all be VR stuff and we're going to peace out. And then we saw this like ridiculous Bluetooth connected fidget spinner. That has this like open API that developers can use. And then you can control things with a fidget spinner. So the examples they had set up on the show floor was you could spin your fidget spinner to like control music, kind of like you were I guess you're using like a turntable,
like those DJ apps.
Which I don't know, that seemed kind of cool. And there was a Flappy Bird sort of thing they made where you control how high and how low you go based on like what you do with the fidget spinner. Which I don't, this seemed like ridiculous, but at the same time, like, I wonder if it wasn't like, if this wasn't too late, like, has the fidget spinner fad already passed?
Yeah, we even asked them that too, and they're sort of like, well, ours is more than just a fidget spinner, so, you know, whatever, which I guess is sort of true. But I think the problem with this, and it might not even be their fault, because they even told us they found out like a day or two before that they're going to have a booth, so they just kind of threw stuff together. But the Flappy Bird demo was just so jank that it was really hard to get an idea of how fun it could be to play with the spinner. See, I mean, you could sort of see how it worked, but it was like the control, you didn't have as much control as I think you need to have in that. So it's like, I couldn't even get through like one set of pipes.
I kind of think that the killer app for this is just like their like debug app that showed like, you know, how many RPM and stuff like that it was going. And so, cause I feel like that could be like a point of, you know, bragging with your friends at school or whatever you play with.
I hit 1 million spins.
I got a million spins, and like, look, I can get it up to like, you know, 2,500 RPM. You can only do like 1,200 or whatever. Yeah. Like, that seems kind of neat. But again, like, I really wonder if the fidget spinner fad hasn't already set sail.
I don't know. It's the kind of thing that's interesting enough that if they release that to the world, you might be surprised with how someone comes up with something really cool. But so far, it just seems like, you know, another connected thing that doesn't need to be connected.
Yeah. So I bought one. So we'll see if anything cool comes of it. So, that was the other thing. They're $40. So
yeah, $40.
Anyway, next up is Run Venture, which again is another Timberman joint. Yeah. This is pretty cool though, because these guys are really coming up with some very clever control schemes and just overall weird ways to innovate on established gameplay formulas that just use like one or two inputs. So the way this game works is you have a like a slider at the bottom of the screen, and that controls your guy's movement as well as how far you jump. So if you have the slider like all the way to the right, your guy's running right as fast as he can, and you get like this little kind of like Angry Birds aiming arrow sort of thing. That shows the arc that you're going to jump at. So when you're all the way to the right, like, you're going to jump as far as you can, versus like if you're just, you know, like 10% over, you'll just do like a little hop.
Yeah.
And I thought it was pretty interesting, because you kind of have to approach a platformer in a different way, because like if you need to make a big jump, it's like it's always going to be a running jump.
Yeah.
Because your guy's moving at the same time that you're aiming your jump.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. It's just, I'm curious to see how this one's going to pan out. Because like when we tried it was like, all right, this is really weird.
But it was really weird. I within the time I was playing it for the demo, I started to warm up to it and started to feel more comfortable. Like, okay, it clicked, I guess. But I also think like it's tricky to balance the two things. It's like, am I running towards something, or if I want to jump, you know, even if you wanted to like size up a jump that you wanted to make, you have to move to do that. So, you know, if you came into a part with like some really skinny platforms you had to jump through or whatever, it might be kind of tricky, because you got to kind of all do it in one motion. But that said, it seems like the levels are designed around this mechanic anyway. So hopefully it won't be a problem. And by the end, I was like making it through things and jumping over things fine, and sort of recognizing, you know, when I wanted to run and when I wanted to jump or whatever. So it's a really clever control mechanism, I thought.
Yeah, it seems like a cool idea. And, you know, people are always into these like wacky, you know, obtuse controlled difficult games. So like, maybe this will do better than we think because of the weird controls.
Well, I feel like, you know, a lot of people try to do like the one button platformer thing, and no one's ever figured it out without having it be like an auto runner, like Leap Day or Mario Run or whatever, which are fine for what they are. But it's something's cool about being able to run back and forth, and it feels more like a regular platformer, but it also is still one thumb control. So,
right. So next up is Flame versus Blaze, which we saw at the this was right next to Final Fantasy 15 at the Square Enix booth. I don't know. I don't really have too much too intelligent to say about this. It seems like yet another MOBA attempt. And the cadence of the game seems to follow a typical MOBA in that like you have like 5 minutes worth of laning or whatever, where you're picking up these like little minion guys to help you out. Yeah. And then something triggers like your base to turn into this giant like Megazord looking boss thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then those two guys like kind of collide in the center, and then you know you're supposed to fight with the opposite team, and like any extra damage you can throw at the enemy guy, mm-hmm. You know, the boss dude of the other team seems to be how you win the game. So presumably you know, if you get a lead during the first phase of the game, like your boss is going to be more powerful than the other one, so you know, he'll be on a trajectory to win. But at the same time, if you know, it seems like you could also come back if your boss was weaker by getting involved in bigger, better team fights and killing the other team, which, you know, is buying you time to attack their boss.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It seemed like an interesting mechanic, but it's so hard to get behind these sort of MOBAs for me, because I would just rather play League of Legends.
And it's interesting too, because we were like, what are you targeting for like a game session time? And they're like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And 10 minutes, I feel like, is in the middle ground of too long for a mobile session and not long enough. Or if you're going to, you know, spend that much time anyway, why aren't you just playing League of Legends or something else? So I don't know how many people are going to be like, you know, oh, I have 10 minutes to spare. Let me whip my phone out and play, you know, Flame versus Blaze. But then again, I don't know. I could be wrong. But it seems like a very well-made game. It seems like it has some interesting mechanics. And as someone that doesn't play MOBAs at all, I thought it was interesting and fun just for the demo.
Yeah.
But it's not something I can see myself playing on my own. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I mean, I don't know. I've never been super into the MOBA scene. So next one that we saw was also from Square Enix, King's Knight, which this game was actually surprisingly cool. Like, we didn't really understand how to play it at first and probably should have just shot a new video, but it's
learned like, as we went.
It's like if you took like a vertical shooter and combined it with a dungeon crawler. I think is the best way to describe this game. So you're kind of just a guy is like bombing around, and you could have different swipe gestures and different powers you can use and things like that, but everything is sort of slowly progressing vertically.
Mm-hmm.
Which it seems like this is another game that seems bad to demo on an iPad, because it seems like it's meant to be played with one thumb on your iPhone.
And yeah, just instinctively, because I was like, oh, this is like a shooter, I was, you know, trying to swipe back and forth, not realizing you can actually tap and hold and drag and walk wherever you want. It's not like you're locked to a certain position like normal, you know, shoot 'em up would be. So it's definitely like a hybrid of the two. And I think it would have made a lot better progress if I had known I could actually walk wherever I wanted. But I thought it was like the progression system was really interesting. And the fact that there's like a lot of destructible environments and stuff like that, like it was surprisingly more fun than we thought it would be when we first saw it. I mean, we thought it was going to be a Game of War clone or something.
Yeah. So that's their art was like, reminded me a lot of like that sort of march to battle sort of game thing. And then to have it turn out to be this like kind of crazy, vertical scrolling dungeon crawler thing, just it seemed really neat.
And the other cool thing I liked about this is that you can switch characters on the fly, and they all have different abilities. And so, especially during the boss fights, I was finding it was like, you know, one character I was playing like has stronger shots, but it didn't go as far across the screen. And so that was kind of screwing me up trying to fight a boss. So I'd switch to someone who had weaker shots, but the shots go all the way across. So I was actually hitting the boss. And then everyone has really kind of fancy special moves that you can bust out and things like that. So another interesting fact I learned about this game after this is that this is actually related to Final Fantasy 15. And I guess in Final Fantasy 15, the like group of characters is always talking about, oh, we're spending so much time playing this game or whatever.
Oh.
And this is the game they're always talking about playing in Final Fantasy 15. So they actually made it a real game.
That's pretty
cool. And I thought that was kind of like a funny little thing.
Huh.
So yeah, if you played Final Fantasy 15 and you're like, what is this game they're always talking about spending all their time playing? This is it.
Yeah. So King's Knight is also coming soon. So keep your eyes peeled for that. saw Super Meat Boy Forever running on a Switch, which is kind of irrelevant what platform it's running on because it's very obviously a mobile game. And, you know, it's exactly what you would expect it to be. You know, it's kind of seen it demoed at a bunch of other places before. So it's a auto runner where you can slide, jump, and then dash in air. Those are the three control options. And
that we know of, there was no sort of instruction or anything.
the demos didn't start with any kind of tutorial, so there might be other stuff to it. But that kind of seemed like all there is because you were able to.
It was described as a two-button game, so I can't imagine how they'd squeeze any other kind of functionality into it. But
yeah, that's just so amusing, though, after playing this, like how much they're doubling down on, like, oh, this is definitely not a mobile game, and like we're not even working on the mobile port yet. And
they call it a sequel to Super Meat Boy 2, which I feel like, I don't know, I would call it a spinoff because it doesn't feel like true Meat. I mean, it feels like true Meat Boy in a lot of ways, but it's not a full traditional platformer like that. But at the same time, like we've said this a lot when people kind of get upset about auto-running games, 90% of the time in most platformers, you're running to the right anyway. And that's especially true in kind of these speed-running sort of games. And so, you know, in a game like this, it's kind of irrelevant if you can run left or right or not, because you'd just be mashing right anyway. So
yeah.
The few demo levels I played, even though I sucked horribly at them, were super fun. Like, it's definitely controls really tight. It's really fast. It's kind of like a Rayman Jungle Run kind of amped up to 11, which I thought was cool. So, yeah, it's going to be good as long as you know what you're getting going into it, I think, and not expecting, like, a game more similar to the original Super Meat Boy, which I still think would be a good port for mobile, even with virtual buttons and everything. But this is a nice solution to that. It is, as of right now, a console game, and it will come to mobile someday next year, maybe.
Yeah, I would love to be a fly on the wall when the developers are talking honestly about their intentions behind this game, because it seems pretty obvious, like, you know, when it was announced and originally, you know, done everything, that mobile was super lucrative at the time, right? So they were like, oh, we got to make a mobile game, and it took forever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, mobile sort of waned in a way when it came to, like, the indie stuff. And then, you know, Steam and consoles picked up in a big way.
Yeah.
So it's like they've got this game they need to pretend is definitely not a mobile game, even though it's a two-button auto runner, which, I mean, it'll be interesting to see the reaction once it finally comes out, if more people see through it or if they're going to keep buying that. So,
yeah, I mean, it's definitely got that same hardcore-ness to it that the original game does. So I don't know. Maybe it'll appeal to those fans whether they think it's a mobile-y sort of game or not.
Yeah, I don't know. So Tunnels and Trolls was also shown at PAX. And like, so this had come out like the week before, and I hadn't fiddled with it at all because we were, you know, busy getting ready and stuff like that. Really, really cool game. If you haven't, if you're even remotely interested in choosing your adventure stuff and you haven't checked this game out yet, like you owe it to yourself to download and at least try out the free version or the free story that comes with it. So what we talked to them about at PAX was kind of like their larger overall plan for the game, which I thought was really cool. So they have all this stuff in the works to allow people to basically use their own editor that they use to you know, build these stories in the game. And it was really cool how very simple and fast it was to use. Like, you know, they were showing us, you know, how to just string together like a simple kind of like, you know, three choice story, you know, three story frames, and you're able to do it in like a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
And you don't need to know anything to do with, you know, you don't need to know any programming stuff or really anything else. Like, it's just,
it's like if you could make a PowerPoint presentation, you could make a whole giant choose your own adventure.
Yeah, I mean, I would even say a PowerPoint presentation would be more complicated than
I agree
using this. So but you know, really I'm very impressed with the demo. It's a lot like if anyone's ever fiddled with Twine, which is a similar kind of text-based adventure thing, like it works a lot like that, and that you kind of like have a map of how all the different story panels like connect to each other and can go in and edit them all and things like that. So they also had some interesting plans as far as how they were going to allow the game to monetize itself, with the idea being that, like, hey, if you, I'm sorry, and the idea being that they're going to like give kickbacks to the various content creators. So like say you make fantasy art and you upload the fantasy art, and then that fantasy art is used in like some of their more popular stories, you know, that are premium stories people are buying, like you're going to get a cut of that. And like, you know, if you write the story and put it up, you're going to get a cut of that and everything else, which seems like a really cool idea, but kind of a logistical nightmare from a business perspective. So I'm kind of curious to see how that actually kind of translates from, no, this is kind of the dream that we're shooting for to, all right, this is reality now.
I also wonder too, if there's like a lot of like fantasy adventure authors out there that, you know, are writing actual books that are like, oh crap, I can take these books I wrote and sort of like rejigger them using their editor and make them into this game, and then have like some more well-known authors releasing episodes and things like that. That could be very cool. So I don't know. It's such an ambitious sort of idea, and I think it's a really good one, but I also think that it's going to take a lot to get off the ground and get to where they want it to be.
That's kind of my problem with it, is that, you know, from a pessimistic standpoint, I guess, like, if this would have launched in like, you know, 2009 or 2010 or something like that, and would have been among the first game books on the App Store, and it like not only was a game book, but it was a collection of game books, and like you create your own and all this other stuff, like I think this would be like the predominant game book platform on the App Store
right now. Totally.
But when you enter the App Store of 2017 and you know, there are outstanding game books on the App Store, and like you know, between God, I'm so bad at remembering the titles of these games.
Sorcery and...
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, take a game like Sorcery, which has, you know, a full interactive map, and that other one that actually has, like, full 3D battles that you do, like, kind of Infinity Blade swiping on, and that Tin Man Games Warlock of Firetop Mountain or whatever, where, you know, like, the adventuring looks like you're playing, like, a Dungeons & Dragons board game kind of thing.
Right,
like,
right.
It just sort of makes these kind of simple text-based adventures like feel older than they really should in comparison.
Yeah. I think the best way to compare something like this, and I would urge everyone to try it because it's free anyway, but this isn't my sort of thing at all. I don't like read Choose Your Adventure novels or anything like that. But so when I tried this, I was like really pleasantly surprised because everything's so automated, and I feel like that's sort of the dream, especially with like digital board games and stuff like that. It's like you don't keep track of pieces, and you don't have to keep track of scores or dice rolls or stats. All that stuff is done for you. And so the automation in this game I thought was really cool. It's like, oh man, an idiot like me can just tap along and have these really cool like random pen and paper style RPG adventures without having to deal with anything. So I think that's sort of like the really cool selling point of this particular game.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'd definitely be very curious to watch how this pans out, but I just, I really wonder if they're not too late to the party on this, this whole thing. So we'll see. So another kind of cool story that we saw, and this, I mentioned this in the Macromers roundup thing, is that like, this is one of my favorite things about covering mobile games, is like when you just run into someone at a conference and they're like, oh, let me check, let me show you this. And they just pull their phone out of their pocket, and it's like a, you know, a brand new mobile game that, you know, you hadn't seen before or heard of, or well, I guess I had heard of this, but so Armello is a game that originally was pitched in 2011 as an iPad game. And I don't know the whole timeline of the project, because it was, you know, a very long thing and pretty involved and stuff like that. But I believe there was like a Kickstarter or like other kind of crowdsourcing kind of stuff. You know, they developed a game and then launched it on PC and consoles first, which turned out to be pretty good, because I guess the game is successful enough that they've been able to sell, you know, a bunch of DLC packs and things like that. So it's definitely found its audience. But, you know, people have always been wondering, like, all right, well, you know, you originally pitched this game as a mobile game. Like, where's where's the iPad version or whatever else?
Yeah.
You know? So this is finally working on iOS devices. They plan to, I want to say this year. And it's going to be a free-to-play game with you slowly unlocking the different heroes and characters and things like that, or paying to unlock them or whatever else. So
it looks super impressive. I like the visuals a lot.
Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, and it's a game that on Steam is, you know, reviewed overwhelmingly positive. So
I always get excited when, like, the name Armello, like, I hear that, and I think, like, oh, that's that game that'll never, ever come out that we've covered for years. And then when games pop up and they actually are, like, really coming, that gets me excited.
Yeah. So in the indie mega booth, we saw Rusty Lake Paradise, which I guess is a sequel to Rusty Lake or a continuation or a spinoff or something to do in the Rusty Lake universe. So if you haven't played any of those games, they're these like really, really, really weird point and click kind of adventure games. Mm-hmm. And that definitely is the case here. Like, you know, they walked us through a bit of the start, and it has a lot to do with like collecting leeches and pouring blood into the statue, which then, you know, opens up this weird bloody painting thing and
lots of unpleasantries.
Yeah. So I don't know. I didn't really get too much into the original Rusty Lake, so I don't really have too much to say about this one other than like if you enjoyed that, this is more.
I think they have a definite audience of fans that love this sort of like creepy, twisted, sort of messed up stuff.
Oh, for sure.
But also these games in particular are like really, really old school adventure game designs where the puzzles are so obtuse that you're just sort of like touching items to things and hoping for the best. Nothing really pans out super logically for the most part.
No, it's totally true. Like even the initial like tutorial thing that you have to do, like you put together a fishing pole and it's like, dude, I never would have thought to do this kind of crap.
Collect items to make a fishing pole to get a worm to unlock this thing because it's cool though. I mean, it's like if you're into that sort of thing, which a lot of people are, then you should like this game too and the others.
Yeah.
But you got to really be into that style of adventure game.
Yeah, which I'm personally not really, but I know there's a ton of people that are, so it's kind of irrelevant whether or not I like it. So I think this is the last game from the Timberman crew, this game is called Tinder West.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a sequel / spinoff sort of thing of Tinderman, where I guess you're Tinderman, but now you're in the Wild West and you're shooting cowboys.
You keep saying Tinderman, and I feel like that's a different game.
Timberman.
Not Tinderman. That's a game waiting to be made right there.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's Timberman, this is like a weird offshoot of it, but actually like their other games, it shows a really clever sort of like control mechanism where you would tap on the screen and like a little aiming circle would rise up, and then you'd let go when it was targeted over the enemies you wanted to shoot. And it's sort of like an old school kind of shooting gallery type of game or whatever. But it was another one that was sort of like odd at first, and then once you got used to it, felt great, and then by the end of my demo I was like firing off dudes left and right and it felt really good. So
I'm just more than anything else I'm curious to see if these games kind of do as well as Timberman, because I think Timberman was just one of those like I couldn't even tell you why it was so popular, but it got really huge and they made, you know, it was the fourth game they showed us that was all really good, but you know, does lightning strike twice on the App Store? Who knows?
I don't think you'll ever reach the... I mean, Timberman was one of those special cases where a game just gets unbelievably popular. But I think they've retained, you know, you can see in their other games that they've tried to retain that sort of philosophy of like really simple touch controls, but like, you know, a little bit meatier depth-wise. And I don't know. I feel like it's... if you like those fast kind of high-scoring arcade games, then they're making some good stuff for those people.
Yeah, totally. So we got to see Tiny Bubbles in action, and this is a game that we posted some trailers of, and I don't know, I looked at this and I was like, oh, that looks cool, but I sort of assumed it was just kind of like another sort of physics puzzler sort of thing that, I don't know, I mean, because we see so many of these kind of games where it's like, you know, combine the colors or pop the bubbles or whatever else, and this one I think really does some interesting things because there's a, like, total physics engine involved with how the bubbles behave, and there's not only a color matching system but also like a color mixing system. You know, so it shows like the first early levels then start like jumping into more in-depth stuff in later in the game, and it is crazy the stuff that this game asks you to do. Like I almost worry that it's too complicated. You know, because like
it could be when we first posted the trailer, it was more or less just because, I don't know, this is some sort of puzzle or matching game. I'm not even really sure what you can do by the trailer, but look how rad the physics are and the, you know, the fluidity of the bubbles and things like that. Like, it was just a really nice, appealing looking game. But it didn't do a good job of explaining what the heck you do. And so I feel like this demo was really beneficial to someone like me that was like, I think your game looks neat, but I don't know why, what it does or why I want to play it.
Yeah.
And then as he continued to kind of explain and jump around the different parts of the game, there is so much going on in this. So, yeah, I think it'll really all come down to kind of like how the difficulty balance goes and the progression goes. Because if they can kind of slowly teach you these things as you progress through the levels normally, then by the time you get to the end, you know, then maybe it won't be as daunting, but yeah. It's also far from just like, you know, match some gems together.
Right, for sure. Like when he was showing us like some of the later levels, I was like, this looks really cool, but I have no idea what you're doing or any of the strategy you're using to complete this level or anything else. So, but yeah, I don't know. It was neat to see it. There's a lot more to this game, I guess, than we were kind of expecting. Let's see. So real quick, we got another look at Dandara, which
this game's rad.
A cool Metroidvania sort of it's a Metroidvania game. So right now they're figuring out like if it's gonna launch on everything at the same time, or if it's gonna launch on, you know, like Switch and PC and consoles and stuff like that first and then mobile later. But I really dig like the control scheme, and I think we've talked about this before. We definitely have written about it a bunch. So, like what you do is you basically just jump from platform to platform instead of having any real movement control beyond that, which I think would make for a really good mobile game. Obviously, because it, you know, started that way, because you don't really need to have the like fine tuned movement, because you're really just you know, jumping and aiming your jump, and then when you release, you jump. And you just kind of go from there. What was cool about this, because you stick to walls and things, there is really no like up or down in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And levels are constantly kind of like, you know, rotating and stuff. And yeah, you never really know. There's no true up.
Yeah. Because it's not like when you know, like say you're standing on like the bottom of the screen and you jump to the top. It's not like your guy is hanging from the top. Like instead, it's like gravity just shifts and that's just the way that you're standing. Yeah. So I think it's going to allow for some very interesting gameplay mechanics that you know, we don't really see in like the, you know, 5-minute early demo or whatever, beyond being like, oh, cool, I see where this is going. This looks really neat. Yeah. Like, can't wait to play more.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So hopefully it launches quickly with mobile, but, you know, we'll see. Can't really blame them for doing Switch and stuff first. Thimbleweed Park is another kind of similar story in that it launched on... I think it's just PC, right? Or is it also on consoles? I don't remember.
It was Xbox and PC in March, and then it just came to PlayStation 4 like last week or something.
Okay. So this is a point and click, like super classic Maniac Mansion style adventure game made by Ron Gilbert, who actually, you know, was involved in most of those super early ones. And you know, I know we've discussed on the podcast before, and I'm always like, yeah, I'm saving myself for iPad because that's how I want to, you know, play this game, because I really like these sort of games on iPad. And the story basically is that we saw it running on the iPad. It seems good to go. Sounds like they're just kind of waiting to hear from Apple on, like, you know, when they should launch, or like if they're going to get any kind of feature support or anything else, which I'd be shocked if they didn't, because like the success this game has seen so far has really kind of even blown me away. I know, like, you know, because it launched with a Kickstarter, and I was like, oh, Ron, you know, Ron's a cool dude and definitely has the chops to make something cool. And, you know, there's all these people that are nostalgic for those kind of games. Like, I just don't, I mean, it seems like very niche to me. Yeah. And then, like, it just exploded to the point where, like, there are people like cosplaying Thimbleweed Park characters at PAX and all sorts of stuff like that. So, like, I am so happy that this game is doing well, because I totally expected. All right, so my PC just crashed, which is cool. So anyway, but just Thimbleweed Park is going to be cool. I don't know how much I got of that, but we were just talking about how awesome Thimbleweed Park is. So last 5 seconds caught off, that was what we were talking about. after that, last but not least is West of Loathing, which I guess you know more about this than I did. I was like, I don't know, this looks kind of weird.
So Kingdom of Loathing is like a browser based MMO that's been around for like, I want to say like 15 years or something crazy like that, and it's super popular. And then so the makers of that made a like a normal RPG out of it using like the same style and humor and stuff like that. So this isn't like an MMO, it's just like a regular sort of RPG that you play through. And they've been working on it for a year or two, and it just released on desktop, I want to say like last week, really recently. And so now that it's on the PC version's released, they're, you know, working on the mobile version. And so we were able to see it running on an iPad. They still have some sort of like UI things to kind of rejigger for the touchscreen, but overall it worked pretty well.
It seemed fine.
Yeah, and right off the bat was super funny too. So I'm not like a big MMO person. I wasn't into Kingdom of Loathing or anything like that, but I just like the style and humor of this based on the trailers I've been seeing, you know, leading up to it releasing. So I'm actually excited to kind of try this one out. But it's, again, a situation where I'm like, I'd rather play this through on mobile. So I'll wait for that version, which apparently it seems like should be out before the end of the year. So
yeah, so that's cool. So that's like our PAX coverage, I guess, of stuff that we could talk about right now. So I think of the games I'm most excited for, probably Final Fantasy 15 mobile. Puzzle Fighter seems really good. I don't know, like, we didn't see anything that was bad. Like, that was the thing. Like, everything that we saw is cool. So it's like,
did we skip over that Plunge game? I was anxious to talk about that one, the puzzly dungeon crawly kind of guy.
Oh, I don't think I have that in this actual roundup. I need to fix that.
Dun dun dun. That was a cool game. I don't know if you'll be able to find it.
Find it.
Probably.
I guess it didn't. Yeah, I didn't tag it with PAX. That's why it was not in the roundup.
Oh.
Yeah, this game is really cool. It was like a I don't know, like a, is calling these Sobocon likes? Is that the right word for these?
I don't think it's quite the same as Sokoban, but it's similar. Sorry. It's the kind of game where you slide across the entire screen until you hit something. So they sort of like took that puzzle idea and gave it sort of a dungeon crawler motif. So what you're doing is you're sliding around each level and trying to, you know, gain an item or gain a key to open up a door that lets you drop down to the next level. So at its heart, it's mostly a puzzle game, but the art style and stuff and the animation especially was really cool. And then it's got a lot of dungeon crawling sort of trappings along with it. And so, yeah, we saw this game just kind of tucked away and thought it looked really neat. And then when we played it, was pleasantly surprised to find out it's like a mobile first sort of game too. And so that's kind of rare to see anymore.
Yeah.
Although they do want to bring it to desktop and stuff too. But
yes, this looks cool. I was excited for this as well. Like this definitely seems like so this was in the middle of all these like PC Steam titles, and it kind of felt like this guy was just kind of like odd man out with like a, you know, touchscreen game that everyone was just kind of passing up, which I always feel kind of bad.
I was running on a touchscreen laptop too. I wonder if that was like a requirement. Like, you can't set up an iPad, man.
Well, it might just be also just be running in like the Unity simulator or something like that.
But it was very, very cool. And he got my email and said he'd send me a test flight build. So we'll see if that happens. And if it does, I'll talk some more about it. But it seemed like it was pretty far along and probably coming soon.
Pretty cool. So we'll just blaze through some of these news stories that I have, because we're running kind of long here, but I still wanted to
get it's almost a super-sized podcast.
Yeah. So real quick, Simogo stuff got updated to 64-bit. And it's on sale right now as of a recording on Friday. And they mentioned on Twitter, like, this might be the last time that their stuff goes on sale. So definitely get in on that while the getting's good. Everything Simogo has made is good. So just go to your phone right now, go to the App Store, type in Simogo, S-I-M-O-G-O, and just download anything that you don't have. I'm going to be surprised if you felt disappointed. So Wizards has been teasing for a while what they're going to do next with Magic the Gathering as they drop support for Magic Duels. We found out yesterday on Thursday that it's the game is called Magic the Gathering Arena. And it basically is like they're taking the foundation of Magic Duels in that, you know, like the idea is to make Magic look a little bit nicer, have it be played, you know, digitally in a way that's not super jank like Magic Online. Except this time, instead of having like the wacky limitations on decks and cards and things like that, like this is going to be full real deal Magic moving forward. Which is pretty cool. You know, of course, the internet's pissed off about every conceivable thing under the sun about this game, because like it's mm-hmm. laid out a little different. It's going to be mm-hmm. free to play, which, you know, of course is going to be free to play. It's going to have a monetization model like Hearthstone. Why would it have anything but that? You know, people are mad you can't use your Magic Online cards with it, and like mm-hmm. it's only going to be standard only at launch, and mm-hmm. all this other stuff. So I don't know. If you are excited for a better way to play Magic on your iPad, this is going to be it. You know, they haven't specifically said that it's going to launch on mobile yet, but the game is developed in Unity, and they did go out of their way on the stream several times to say, like, you know, we're going to bring it to every platform that makes sense, and it would seem very stupid if it didn't eventually come out, you know, at minimum on iPad. So the Hearthstone Summer Championship is going to be, I believe, the first event that's going to be hosted in the Blizzard Arena, which is a brand new esports venue that they have put together, like, exclusively for, you know, esports of their own games, which,
interesting.
It's kind of a non-story, but I just thought it's kind of amazing to think that we live in a time where, like, esports have grown to the point where a company like Blizzard can be like, hey, let's build a stadium mm-hmm. for this, you know, so... That's pretty cool. I guess if you thought esports were a fad and was going to go away, you're probably not right on that one. Butterscotch Shenanigans announced the title of their next game. It's called Scuffle Buddies. They don't really have any details beyond that, kind of, you know, inviting people to speculate on what it might be. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, people think it's going to be like a Pokemon thing maybe, or, you know, something to do with like collecting monsters or pets or other stuff, which seems reasonable, but...
My money's on some sort of sportsy kind of game.
Maybe. I think the only safe bet is that it's not going to be a small scope game, because I really don't think that they can follow up Crashlands with like a flop rocket, you know?
I don't know. I think it could be a smaller scope game, because how do you do another thing like Crashlands that took many years? Might be like a nice palette refresh too, to kind of release something a little bit simpler, but... Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited to hear more.
I just think with the momentum they've built of having, you know, like sites like Polygon and stuff like that covering their stuff, yeah. like I think you only get one chance before they're like, oh, you just make mobile baby games, and you know, you just lucked out that one time you made a good one. So Pokemon Go, the CEO of Niantic was interviewed by Bloomberg, who kind of laid out, the CEO of Pokemon Company, not Niantic. I need to update that. Kind of laid out the vision for the future of the game, which includes peer-to-peer battling as well as Pokemon trading, which seems pretty cool. But I don't know, it also feels like too little too late. Right?
We'll
maybe.
See.
I don't know.
It's hard to gauge with this game, because I feel like there's still a ton of people playing it, but it's just not as massive as it once was, so yeah. It's hard to tell.
It just makes me think that, like, if they would have... I wonder what would have happened if they waited a year to launch the game. Right. And just have launched it with all of this stuff. And like, imagine if it launched with Pokemon trading and player battling and stuff like that, like how much bigger the game would be and how much better it would have retained its players instead of, like, you know, people like me that, yeah, I think I had like, you know, one or two really cool weekends with Pokemon Go, and then that was kind of it. You know, it was like, I caught a million Pidgeys and like the few cool Pokemon in our area, and the people at the gyms were way higher level than I was, and there was really kind of nothing else to do. So.
Yeah.
So Radiant Games, they took their catalog off the App Store for a while because, you know, all their games were broken and they didn't really have plans for updates or whatever. But they recently put them all back on the store. They're discounted to $1, and they're working on updating them all.
So that is super good news, because I know this guy, his last game did not do well at all, and he was kind of banking on it.
Yeah.
And so... I sort of just assumed, like, once, you know, you can only, you know, try something like this and lose everything so many times. So I sort of figured he'd be gone for good, and happy to see him come back, because some of the best dual stick and puzzle games out there.
Yeah. So if you are missing any of these games, like, I think they're safe games to buy because they're all really good. You know, we have reviews up for like all of them, I think, or almost all of them. And you can just, you know, grab them, and they might be broken for a little while after iOS 11 comes out, but the dude seems committed to updating them. So, you know, as long as you're aware of the caveats, I think it's safe to grab them. So Warhammer Quest 2, the original Warhammer Quest, is super popular, kind of turn-based RPG sort of thing. This is coming out on October 19th. Pretty excited for that one. Also when it comes to updates, Batman the Telltale series, Kind of got some good stuff this week. So the first episode is now free, like Telltale typically does with their games. Once they start releasing more episodes, they release the first one free, and you can try it out before you decide whether or not you want to play any more of them or pay to play some more of them or whatever else. So this also got some big performance upgrades on mobile, because like it was kind of chunky as far as, you know, the game on mobile. So definitely check it out. And they're also sponsoring the site this week, so extra reason to click through our link and download it. So see, they got their money's worth. And last thing I have on my news is actually older than I thought it was. Like, I thought this was a new thing, but I guess that just goes to show you how much people are paying attention to MFI controllers. Yeah. So Apple currently has a bundle up on their site for $40, and that gets you the SteelSeries Nimbus controller, which I have on my desk right here. It's the best MFI controller, IMO, because it charges over Lightning, works with everything, it's full size, you know, feels good, works good, nothing bad to say about it. So that game or that controller on Amazon, you can buy for like $45 just for the controller itself. Or through Apple, you get a code for Minecraft Apple TV Edition, which costs $20 normally if you would have bought it. So you're getting the controller for cheaper than you can buy it off Amazon, and you're getting what's probably, you know, among, if not the best, definitely the most popular game on the Apple TV in one bundle that is way cheaper. Which, I mean, this is really cool. I just wish Apple would have done stuff like this years ago when MFI controllers were new and they were trying to sell them for $100 a piece and
seriously
all this ridiculous stuff. Like, this almost seems like too little too late for that sort of thing, but I don't know. I guess we'll see. It seems like a good value, if nothing else. If you don't really care about Minecraft, Apple TV Edition, it comes with a digital code, which you presumably could sell to someone for, I don't know, I'd be surprised if you get the full $20 for it, but if someone wanted to, probably get 10, you know, making the controller $30, which really good deal for a very good MFI controller. And with that, I think that is all we're gonna do for the podcast this week. We're running pretty long. Games that I think are worth checking out if you haven't yet is this Nobleman 1876, right?
1896,
yeah. Adelmine and Axiom are the games we got. I'll just keep these on here. We'll play them next week.
Talk about it next week, yeah.
But anyway, thanks a ton for watching, or I'm sorry, watching or listening to this episode of the Touch Arcade Show. You know, as we mentioned at the start of the show, we are primarily supported by Patreon, which you could find at patreon.com/touch arcade. And, you know, once again, a big thank you to all our existing and previous backers that, you know, allow us to continue doing what we're doing. It means a lot. If you're not into the Patreon thing but still want to support the site, you can shop on Amazon through our link at toucharcade.com/Amazon. The more people that start using that, the better it is for us, because it's like an internet change jar that fills up reasonably quickly. Otherwise, you can subscribe to us on Twitch at twitch.tv/toucharcade, or just come hang out in our Discord at discord.gg/toucharcade. If you like this episode of the show, leave us an iTunes review. I always love seeing those. And if you want to send us an email to suggest topics to talk about or have questions or anything else like that, it's a podcast@toucharcade.com. And with that, that's going to be this week's episode. Thanks a ton for listening, and we'll catch you next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.